Du lytter til Radio 24/7.
Den originale taleradio.
Velkommen til Aflyttet med Anders Kjærulf.
Velkommen til et program, der i ført skæg og blå briller, i hvert fald indeni, men denne gang som også udenpå, hvor du får historien om den amerikanske programmør Jason Katz, der kom til at begå en fatal fejltagelse, nemlig at forsøge at hjælpe Wikileaks fra det helt forkerte sted på det helt forkerte tidspunkt. Men det er også en anden historie, nemlig historien om at lave et hemmeligt interview. Det er ikke så nemt, som det lyder, når journalisten sidder i Danmark og kilden sidder på Island. Men jeg kan allerede nu afsløre, at det sagtens kan lade sig gøre. Ellers havde den her udsendelse jo ikke været til, og det er den jo. Velkommen til Aflyttet. Dit periskop ud af det overvågningssamfund, som vi alle sammen dykker i. Jeg hedder Anders Kjærulf. Velkommen til.
I had another talk.
Okay, fine. We'll try the speakerphone. This is very interesting. Does it work?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. You know, I can always tell when someone's on speakerphone.
Yeah.
But the sound quality sounds fine.
Hvis den her udsendelse lyder en lille smule dårligere, end den plejer, så skyldes det kryptering. Jason Katz og jeg taler nemlig sammen gennem programmet Signal, en krypteret beskedtjeneste til iPhones og Android, som man også kan lave internettelefonopkald igennem. Skulle nogen forsøge at aflytte vores samtale, så er der kun støj. Det er kun os to, i hver vores ende af verden, der kan høre, hvad vi siger. Jeg optager det hele med en mikrofon, jeg har lagt oven på min telefon, der er på speakerphone. Jason er typen, der er opmærksom på, når folk bruger speakerphones. Han kan altid høre, når folk bruger det og bryder sig ikke om det, for så kan andre jo lytte med. Men i dag, i vores samtale, så er det efter aftale. Alt er bedre end at bruge Skype, der ejes af Microsoft, og som er kendt for at have en dør åben til de amerikanske efterretningstjenester. Og dem er vi ikke interesseret i at have med på en lytter, i hvert fald ikke lige nu.
Could we start at the beginning, which is you have a story which kind of connects to Chelsea Manning, and it started a long time ago while you were still working at a lab in the United States. What happened? How did you get into contact with WikiLeaks?
So there was a chat room that I was idling in a lot of the time, and this was where I spent most of my. This is where all of this stuff kind of got started.
So while you were in this chat room, you were trying to help the guys at WikiLeaks because you were fascinated about stuff, and you made an attempt at one file.
Mm-hmm. Well, allegedly, yes, I made an attempt at one file.
Yeah.
Oh, this is yeah.
Jason Katz er en meget forsigtig mand, og det har han været de sidste 6 år. Han har faktisk kun talt med en person ud over mig om, hvad der skete dengang. Det var med journalisten Kim Setter fra Vice Magazine, der i maj udgav artiklen "Manden, der begik den fejltagelse og hjælpe WikiLeaks". Den historie starter i et IRC, Internet Relay Chat Room, hvor man talte om WikiLeaks og ikke mindst om Bradley Manning, nu Chelsea Manning, der havde lækket enorme mængder af data fra det amerikanske militær til WikiLeaks, blandt andet en række videoer fra kampzoner i Irak og Afghanistan. Den mest kendte af de videoer var Collateral Murder.
Hotel 26, Crazy Horse 18, have 5 to 6 individuals with AK-47s. Request permission to engage.
Collateral Murder på dansk indirekte mord var video- og radiokommunikation fra en Apache-helikopter. Videoen viser nedskydningen over 20 civile, inklusive 2 medarbejdere ved Reuters. Den video blev lagt på nettet 5. april 2010 og forårsagede udbredt vrede over skyttens nærmest videospilsagtige tilgang til det at slå ihjel. Verden var rystet, og militæret, der havde hemmelighedsstemplet videoen, var vrede. Mindre end en måned efter blev Chelsea Manning anholdt, efter at hackeren Adrian Lemo havde meldt hende til FBI. Men Lemo, der også havde sin gang i WikiLeaks chatrummet, nøjede sig med at melde Manning. Pilen pegede også på Jason Katz. Katz arbejdede på det tidspunkt for Brookhaven National Laboratory, der arbejdede for regeringen. Og mens Katz arbejdede der, så brugte han noget af sin fritid på at dekryptere en anden Manning-video fra Afghanistan. Ifølge Katz, så gjorde han kun et enkelt forsøg, og det lykkedes ikke. Men indsatsen blev bemærket. Også Adrian Lemo, der bekræftede, at Katz havde været med. Men det, der virkelig gik galt, var selve stedet, Katz arbejdede på. Her var sikkerhedsbevidstheden nemlig ekstremt høj.
And the file you were trying to decrypt one file.
Yes.
And while you were doing that, what happened to you?
I mean, part of the story was that when I worked at the laboratory, which is a distinct entity on American soil. It's not. It's a reduced constitutional zone because it's a federal laboratory. It's a Department of Energy laboratory. You have reduced civil rights, and you agree to this when you go onto this campus, as it were. And also the amount of trouble you could get in is much greater. Say you were legally allowed to carry a firearm or something in New York where this was. If you brought that firearm onto this campus, I think it was a humongous penalty, like 30 years in prison or something like this, because of the work they were doing there and just, you know, how these labs are treated. So there were things that happened when I was working on the campus that kind of, because of the atmosphere, exaggerated maybe is the right way to do this. If it was a normal company where I was working and, you know, you weren't using your computer how you're supposed to, you would probably get a scolding from the IT lab, but that would be about it. But here, because I got stubborn when they tried to take my personal laptop and wouldn't consent to giving it to them, this provoked a very strong reaction. And really, none of this was associated with WikiLeaks stuff until maybe, I think we went through the timeline basically together, me and Kim, and I think it was almost a year later or 6 months later, you know, when I was at a new job in a new place, and all of this has kind of faded from memory. So at the time, WikiLeaks really wasn't known much. I mean, it was just starting to be. So really, I got fired for inappropriate IT. Usage.
Jason Katz blev fyret fra sit job hos Brookhaven National Laboratory, ikke fordi han havde lavet noget med WikiLeaks, men fordi han der insisterede på at bruge sin egen computer, og det kolliderede med stedets idéer om sikkerhed. Så fik han et nyt job hos en hedge fund, og så begyndte ting at ske.
You were at a new job, you changed jobs, and then all of a sudden the FBI showed up.
Yeah, but not all of a sudden, because I'm pretty sure I was being actively surveilled between the two. When WikiLeaks started getting in the news and started being more prevalent and a lot of coverage and I think federal reaction to it was happening, that led to, I think, them very quickly putting together a list of people that they needed to target in order to figure out some sort of strategy for dealing with this. You know, I think at a high level, they were kind of pushed to solve this problem because it's very embarrassing.
I foråret 2010 var WikiLeaks ved at få momentum og var konstant i medierne på baggrund af Chelsea Mannings læk af 750.000 hemmelige militære og diplomatiske dokumenter. FBI var under pres og begyndte at gå efter alle, der havde noget med sagen at gøre. Jason Katz havde netop fået et nyt job i det private erhvervsliv hos en hedge fund, og han havde stadig den samme computer og havde glemt alt om WikiLeaks og den fil, han havde prøvet at dekryptere dengang. Men det var der andre, der ikke havde.
So I came in. That was a pretty lax environment. So I think I came in maybe 10 or 11. And I went to the place I worked was arranged in this open floor plan system called pods, which was very popular then. I think is now being phased out because it's horrible for working in. And we were it was like a long hallway. In each and then had hallways branching off of it, which were basically different teams. We were the IT team, and there was next to us an accounting team, and so on and so forth, traders and everything. This was a high-frequency trading company. And we were also near the end of the hallway, and right near us was the kitchen. And I turned on my workstation there, and I set up my, I think, little laptop that I had brought around with me, and started work, and I noticed an unusual, I think it was actually two unusual people kind of walking the corridor with employees from the company. So that was something I noticed, and then I got up to get a drink from the kitchen. It was one of these very fancy places where they, you know, you have unlimited drinks and unlimited snacks and things like this. And then they just kind of grabbed me. The minute I was, they could kind of get between me and the laptop, they just grabbed me and yelled, FBI, FBI, you're not under arrest. Just basically they yelled in my face to kind of disorient me and kind of restrained me, but they didn't tackle me or anything. They just held me away from getting back to my workstation. And after that, I kind of realized what was going on pretty quickly and just offered to... It was funny because at the time, my biggest concern was that I was disrupting my workplace. And so I offered to just go to a conference room and talk to them. And so they said yes, which is, I guess, kind of why they act the way they do, because they want to put you in a position where you're uncomfortable, on a kind of off guard.
Det var en helt almindelig dag på arbejde, og Jason rejser fra sit skrivebord for at hente en sodavand i et af de altid fyldte køleskabe. Da han rejser sig, trænger en flok mænd sig ind imellem ham og hans computer, mens de siger, det er FBI, du er ikke arresteret, mens de holder fast i ham. Jason husker, hvordan han mest er flov over, at de forstyrrer på arbejdet, så han inviterer dem indenfor i et mødelokale.
And then we went to a conference room and sat down, and there were three men, and two of them introduced themselves as being from the New York FBI office, which I think was really just a few blocks away. And one of them was very nervous, I guess, because of the adrenaline of the situation. I remember shaking his hand, and was shaking because of the adrenaline. And they passed me their business cards. And then there was a third guy with him who never identified himself, which I found very interesting at the time.
Why was he interesting?
Because of the lack of introduction, and later on, I mean, so that piqued my interest. Because, I mean, I had read what interrogations are like and what FBI interrogations are like. This was, maybe an interest of mine, we'll say. And I kind of knew what to expect. I mean, I knew the general outline of how interrogations work, establishing reports and, you know, befriending people and good cop, bad cop routines and things like this. It was horrifying because it was happening to me, but it was also very fascinating at some level because it was observing firsthand all of these things I had read about. And then they kind of felt me out for whether I would be willing to work with them, you know, turn basically and probably become some sort of informant or some sort of, you know, person willing to explain things to them or work with them in exchange for leniency or something like this. I answered how I answered in an article that, yeah, that's a nice offer, but you should put it in writing, which I had known FBI don't do. They don't allow you to ever take interrogations. This is a known thing. And they don't like to leave records. They like to keep things very informal because when court cases come around, it's their word against the civilian's word, and their word is weighted more heavily. So I knew they weren't going to really put this in writing, so it was an attempt to kind of get off of that track. And then they kind of idled around for a little bit because they didn't know exactly, I think, how to proceed because I was just not really talking to them. I was asking more questions, but I was giving answers. And they had, when I had said this to them, they said, okay, well, yeah, what's your lawyer's name? And I said, I don't have a lawyer, but I'll have one soon. And then I basically asked what my rights were in that situation. Could I go call a lawyer? Was I free to go? Things like this, to just establish boundaries really quickly, what I was allowed to do in that situation and not allowed to do in that situation. And they said, yeah, you can go make a phone call. And so I called. I think I attempted to contact my brother, and he didn't pick up, which was unfortunate. And then I think the next call I made to was to Rainey Reitman over at the EFF. I had her business card in my wallet. You're familiar with the EFF?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So, and I said, hey, Rainey. And she said, hi. I'm like, do you remember me? Met you at ShmooCon, this hacker conference that happened down in Washington, D.C., I think a few months back. And she said, no, not really. And I said, oh, okay. Well, so I'm being raided by the FBI right now. And she said, oh, okay. I said, yeah, so do you think you could get a lawyer or talk to somebody or give me a call back? And she said, yeah, yeah. What's the number there? And she made some calls and put me on with, I think it was Marcia Hoffman at the time. It's hazy. It was either Granick or Marcia Hoffman, and they very quickly asked me, can you afford a lawyer? And I stupidly said yes, because I, having no idea of how much lawyers cost, and at that time making pretty good money with my job. And they have referred me to a lawyer, and I set up an appointment, I think, there and then, and went back into the conference room. And then me and the guy whose name I never got an introduction to kind of went a couple of rounds trying to asking each other questions and not answering each other's questions before I think he realized it was a bit fruitless. And then I left for the day. I just packed up my stuff. They kept my laptop and I left.
Der er tre mænd. To af dem identificerer sig som agenter fra FBI i New York, og en af dem var meget nervøs, og så var der en tredje fyr, som aldrig identificerede sig selv. Jason havde læst lidt om, hvordan sådan nogle afhøringer fandt sted, og han vidste, hvad der skulle ske. Det var skræmmende, fordi det skete for mig, men også interessant, synes han. Kat ringede til en advokat fra Electronic Frontier Foundation, som han havde mødt for et stykke tid siden til en hackerkonference. Han fik en aftale og gik tilbage til FBI-folkene, der ikke kom ret meget videre den dag. Men de tog hans computer med sig og gik. Og bagefter skete der en masse ting meget hurtigt.
Det også havde some consequences for people who were around you.
Yes, yes. As far as I can tell, they had pulled my cell phone records. I was with Sprint at the time. And basically interviewed anybody that I had maybe regular contact with. So any friends, where I lived at the time in Brooklyn, my girlfriend's family, they tried to talk to my parents, but I think I talked to my parents first. And, you know, in the cases like this, this happens a lot, people think they're being helpful and the FBI phrases it in these ways where they make it seem like there's just a problem, and if you're, we heard you're a friend of so-and-so, and if you could just answer a couple of questions, it would help clear up the confusion. And a lot of people say yes to that. They don't know better that, you know, mostly everything they say will be used against you, that the modus operandi of the FBI is mostly to put people in jail, not really get to the who's innocent, who's guilty, or things like that. They get notches in their belt for prosecuting people. And they also, their job is to line people up to go into the justice system. Whether or not someone's innocent or guilty, they kind of relieve themselves of that responsibility, saying, okay, that's up to the courts and things like this. So it's a bit one-sided from their perspective.
FBI fik indsigt i Kats telefonopkald og gik i gang med at ringe til eller besøge samtlige han kendte, inklusive hans kæreste og hans forældre, hvis hjem blev ransaget, og han blev selv indkaldt som vidne i sagen mod Julian Assange og WikiLeaks. Men pludselig glemte FBI ham igen. Sagen blev opgivet, og Jason Katz flyttede til Island for at begynde på en frisk. Her var han med til at starte det islandske piratparti og lever i dag fredeligt og uden at gøre for meget opmærksom på sig selv. Men Julian Assange og WikiLeaks har han stadig en holdning til. Har de ændret verden, spurgte jeg ham.
I think it's done something good for the world, yeah. I think it's also done something not good for the world. I think that's just history. That's the way history works. There's very little all good things in the world, at least from my rudimentary understanding of history. And it's definitely not, the WikiLeaks saga, so to speak, is not done at all. And I don't know if it'll ever be done. But it certainly changed bits of history here and there, which is kind of significant. I think that's something that's new, maybe in this age. I used to say to people, I think when we would have discussions like this amongst geeks and hackers, that just showing that something can be done is a very powerful beacon for people. That causes them sometimes to wake up, both good and bad. But, it removes apathy. And I feel like maybe the world was very apathetic in that time. You know, it was the recession, and we were still in a, U.S. was still in a war, and it was kind of a war that didn't look like it was going to be ending anytime soon. And people stop thinking about those things after a while. They get outraged, and then they get accepting of their outrage. They let their outrage, they get outrage fatigue, it's called.
Historien har ændret sig på grund af WikiLeaks, og sagaen om dem er ikke slut endnu, mener Jason Katz. Jeg plejede at sige til mine nørdvenner, at bare det, at man rent faktisk kan gøre noget ved tingene, det er meget kraftfuldt for andre. Det stopper apatien, og verden før WikiLeaks var meget apatisk. Efter balladen i USA flyttede han som sagt til Island, men det var faktisk ikke på grund af WikiLeaks og FBI.
Triggered, I think, the raid when it did was that they were afraid I was leaving the United States and it would be much more difficult for them to surveil me and arrest me. So I think they were maybe playing kind of a long game and surveilling me and seeing what they could learn about my interactions. But when I was about to take this job here in Iceland, or I flew to Iceland, I think they panicked a little bit and they felt like they had to move quickly. Which is a bit silly, because Iceland has an extradition treaty with the U.S.
Jason Katz mener faktisk, at netop hans beslutning om at flytte til Island fik FBI til at flippe ud og afhøre ham på kontoret, før han kunne tage afsted, hvilket, som han siger, er fjollet, da Island har en udleveringsaftale med USA. Men hvordan påvirker det her møde med FBI ham så fremover?
It was almost a relief when all of this happened. In a weird way, it was. Are you familiar with catharsis? This cathartic.
Which one?
Catharsis.
Yes, cathartic? Yes, of course.
I had spent maybe 10 years excess reading about the war on hackers and intelligence agencies and all of the kind of things they get up to and people being arrested, some people who really did relatively nothing and being given very long jail sentences. Aaron Schwartz, Adrian Lamo, of all people, Kevin Mitchnick, all of these people who really the Department of Justice just ruined their lives because of were like disproportionate reactions to things that were quite mild. There were some people who did some bad things and stole lots of monies, but for the most part, these were people that were just curious about how things worked and found something neat and were often open to fixing that thing. But instead they would throw the book at these people. It was cathartic in the sense that the trap got sprung and I no longer had to worry about where the line was about, you know, oh, is this too far? Is this, you know, what's the line between being curious and being a bad guy or being a bad person? And the line was way, way back, apparently, you know, perspective for the public, you know, for the guys who work in these types of jobs in law enforcement, who was a bad guy. And the truth is that a bad guy is anybody who kind of the government feels would be a good scapegoat at the time. So they're pretty indiscriminate about who they consider bad guy. It very much depends on the environment. So yeah, after that, it was better because I was cognitively lighter. I had less options. I could stay in the U.S. and sit there waiting for some court case that might never come. I probably wouldn't get a job again in computers, or it'd be very difficult to get a job again in computers. I had this job that was offered to me here in Iceland, and it seemed like an interesting job. And I had also grown tired of living in the States. I like the States. There's many good people there, but I had grown tired of the entrenched kind of politics and positions and policies of the United States. I didn't feel like they were very functional in the greater sense. I felt like it was stagnant. And I felt like it was going to continue to stagnate. I felt like it wasn't, after the Patriot Act came out, I felt like we were going to experience maybe 10 to 20 years of just increasing surveillance creep and apathy from the public. And that it was going to be a long time before that kind of swung back the other way. Just from my you know, layman's understanding of how history works and how people work, I didn't think it was going to change anytime soon.
Mødet med ordensmagten og FBI var på mange måder en lettelse, en katarsisk oplevelse for Jason Katz. Katz var typen, der altid havde læst om efterretningstjenester, politi og hacker, der kom i fængsel, og han havde fulgt sagerne mod Adrian Lemo, Kevin Mitnick og alle de store straffe, de fik. Nu blev han pludselig selv konfronteret af FBI og blev dermed klar over, hvor linjen gik, hvor man blev til en skurk. Han kunne blive i USA, hvor han ikke længere kunne få sig et job med computer på grund af sagen, eller tage til Island, og det sidste virkede mere fornuftigt. Ikke mindst i en verden, hvor folk som Aaron Swartz fik FBI og staten på nakken.
For a while was Manning, and watching what was going on and happening with Manning. First she got arrested, and then they were transferred here, and then transferred there, and solitary confinement, and then eventually charges. And then, of course, Aaron Swartz. I remember reading and being really upset by Aaron Swartz. This was in the early days of the Pirates, actually. I remember smashing a glass bottle against a wall when talking to people. I mean, I might have been drinking also, but I was really, really bothered by Aaron Swartz because he... You know who I'm referencing, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so he just... The system, the same system that had tried to go after me and countless other people, had gotten to him. Had cut him in the right kind of acupuncture points, and his support system came crumbling down. I mean, and this is a guy who was, almost a genius in some ways. He was a child prodigy with computers. He was talking to some of the best minds on the internet, developing things for the internet, and he made one big, what's equivalent in some places to a college prank or. And he got dropped by the university. They didn't defend him at all. They covered their own assets, and he killed himself because he thought he was going to prison. He thought there was no alternative. I mean, they drained his family's finances with a court case, and then he had resigned himself that he was going to prison, and he killed himself. And it still bothers me even talking about it now that I'm thinking about it. Is that somebody that smart, that does so much public good. You know, we were talking about OpenStreetMap before and, infrastructure. This guy wrote infrastructure that everybody around the world uses, and he had to kill himself because the world couldn't recognize a personality that could encompass two facets of wanting to develop infrastructure and open source and free information for the rest of the world and... Oh, he's been accused of a crime, and we got to send him to jail. I mean, I find that a complete dichotomy that people can be okay with that. But you have this person that did all this public good, then effectively by the public when it no longer suited them. When that narrative no longer suited everyone.
Aaron Swartz blev tvunget ud i selvmord, da regeringen begyndte at gå efter ham. Swartz var kendt som udvikleren af RSS og som skaberen af Reddit, men i 2011 blev han anklaget for at have downloadet videnskabelige artikler ulovligt og måtte igennem en lang og dyr retssag, der ruinerede hans familie. Han blev frikendt, men kun for at blive anklaget igen. Presset fik ham til at tage sit eget liv. Jason Katz ser Swartz-sagen som typisk. Et rigidt samfund, der presser de sande visionære ud over kanten, og et samfund, hvor overvågningen er blevet så massiv, at det næsten kunne være en konspirationsteori.
I'm glad that we've advanced in public the dialogue about how spying and tradecraft and intelligence services work. But I mean, the average person doesn't realize how much they do. How this is, you know, tens of thousands of people's daily jobs from 9 to 5 to go into their office and write up strategies and stick it on a shelf and write up more strategies and stick them on a shelf until something happens and they pull that off the shelf and it's like a playbook. I don't think, and then, I mean, previous to all this used to be conspiracy theory stuff. And there are conspiracy theories there, out there in the world. But, you know, it's a fine line between what's a conspiracy and what a coordinated group of people whose full-time job is, and their inherent belief that they're protecting their nation can do.
Jeg er glad for, at vi er blevet mere opmærksom på, hvor meget overvågning vi egentlig er udsat for, siger Jason Katz, der som sagt har ligget meget lavt siden sagen i USA, og generelt har prøvet på ikke at lave for meget ballade. Men hvorfor gik han så med til at lade Weiss snakke med ham, og nu mig?
Have you been living under the radar for a long time, doing your job in Iceland? Why did you come out and speak about what happened in this article in Weiss?
I mean, I think what I wrote about, what Kim wrote about, was probably the most accurate answer. Stupidity. But I mean, I think also just kind of getting it resolved. You know, getting the story out there while the story still matters, because we've the story has progressed so far from its beginnings now. You know, here we are almost a decade later. And, well, maybe that's an exaggeration, almost a decade, but, I mean, and this is still going on. I mean, and all it's done is change, the scope has changed significantly, especially with all the new stuff with these allegations about Russia, and you have shadow broker stuff. I mean, it's just gotten so much bigger. Back when this was happening, people were hearing about Anonymous for the first time, and 4chan. It seems like a lifetime ago when that was, you know, we had news organizations reporting on what Anonymous was. We were debating whether or not blogs were real news back then. The world has progressed very rapidly from when this happened. And I guess I wanted this story to be told.
Yeah.
And maybe this has been far enough along that maybe I'm no longer as radioactive as I once was. I think a friend in the U.S. when all this went down described me as radioactive.
Det handler om at få historien ud, mens den stadigvæk betyder noget. Tingene har jo ikke ændret sig stort. Det er faktisk blevet større nu, den her overvågning, med alle de her russiske hacker og shadow brokers leaks. Dengang det her fandt sted, det var cirka første gang, nogen overhovedet hørte om Anonymous. Da Obama vælger at benåde Chelsea Manning, der blev Katz simpelthen så glad, at han måtte have historien ud. Men er verden blevet bedre af, at vi nu ved mere om, hvad der foregår i efterretningstjenesterne?
I'm weird. I'm a cynical optimist. And I'm cynical in that I think anything can go wrong will go wrong. But I'm naively always expecting the best from people. I don't know what you call that. I have high expectations for people, but I'm continually unsurprised when they disappoint me. So when this pardon came through, I was astounded. I did not think it would happen, but it did. And I'm ecstatic. I mean, she was looking at, what, 30 years in jail? 40 years in jail?
35?
I don't remember. Yeah. So, that's amazing. And again, in some ways, I mean, the thing was a pardon, right? It wasn't, she still has the record, but she was pardoned early, which is, of course, a significant statement in that she was arrested, she was charged, and then her sentence was, she was granted, I guess it's clemency, no, I don't know the difference between the two terms well enough, but they didn't say that what she did wasn't a crime. They said, we're going to let you go early. So they probably, I'd like to think that somebody in Obama's administration thought this was unfair, or that they were doing the right thing. But I think they also didn't want to encourage similar people. I think they saw a pattern maybe developing with Manning and with Snowden and with, of course, Drake and others, that this is going to be, you know, going all the way back to Ellsberg, this is going to be a problem when you hire very smart people. You have to be smart to go to work in intelligence services. Those people think about things like ethics, and they think about things like responsibility, and they don't stop thinking about them just because you hire them and they have to do a job. They're intelligent beings, and they contemplate these things and constantly reevaluate if what they're doing is in line with their ethics and morals and the nation's ethics and morals, which is good. It'd be really bad if they weren't. But then, of course, there's only a 1% of a 1% that actually risk anything when they realize that their morals or ethics are in conflict with what they're doing.
Der har altid været svært samspil mellem den virkelige verden og efterretningstjenesterne. Det er jo ikke noget, vi alle sammen går rundt og bliver til sølvpapirshatte. Vi skal videre med vores æbehjerner. Vi skal blive klogere. Derfor har jeg været glad for Piratpartiet, men det er ikke hele løsningen. Mennesker, de har de samme problemer altid, uanset hvornår de lever. Jeg er optimist. Kynisk optimist, siger altså Jason Katz.
The traditional thinking has always been that a free press will keep human liberties and civil liberties promoted, and organizations that work against civil liberties and human liberties in check. The problem with that is, of course, that we know it doesn't work as cleanly as that. There is a very gray area between those two. I mean, if you go back and read CIA type documents, or you read any NSA type documents, there's a lot of cross-pollination between news agencies and intelligence services. Sometimes they help each other out. Sometimes they print articles that the other one doesn't like, or sometimes CIA agents or intelligence services travel under the guise of being journalists, which hurts the field of journalism. So it's always been there, this complex interplay. I think what's happening now is that it's no longer relegated to specialized areas for people. It's not your neighbor down the street who wears the tinfoil hat. What I would hope in the long term is that it gets people thinking and discussing how to evaluate what we see, read, hear, and think, because that's severely lacking. We don't really, we live in an information age, but we still have, you know, monkey brains, and we need to get better at managing our monkey brains, much, much, much better, if we're going to get anywhere. I don't know how to do that. This is one of the reasons that The Pirates, in some ways, was a very big experiment. We had this idea of decentralization and single transferable boat, you know, meritocracy ideas. But I don't think that experiment was entirely successful. We need methods to overcome our flaws. And those methods can be structural. They can be technological. They can be cultural. I think that the problems that we're experiencing now with fake news and influence by state level actors, they'll never go away because they've always been there, because humans have the same problems no matter what age they live in. So maybe this is a bit of a pressure cooker for us. Maybe we realize we can't go on like this at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Again, here's my cynical optimism again. the world is structured in a way where people believe that they are impotent when they are not. This is one of the reasons I like history. You read about one person in one place and one time who actually turned the situation of, ultimately turned an entire situation around, a world situation, changed the world in some small way that another person later on picked up the ball and changed the world in some small way. People always hold themselves to such a high standard that they need to be this ubermensch who's, or look to a hero to change the world. There's no heroes. It's just a whole bunch of people bumbling around. Even these intelligence agencies, even nation states, it's just all people all the way down. So all it takes is incremental changes in the way we behave, and we can change the world. It just takes collective will, and collective will starts with individual will.
Yeah.
That was a weird answer, I guess.
That was a good answer. Yeah,
but that's a hard problem. That's the problem where technology may be the key. Technology has been able to connect individuals in a way that is, up until now has been magical.
Vi kan ændre verden, hvis vi vil, og måske er teknologi nøglen til det. Teknologi fungerer som ren magi, når man skal forbinde folk, siger Jason Katz. Men hvordan har han haft det med den apati i forhold til overvågning, der er der nu? Hvor vi alle sammen er lidt ligeglade, siger vi ikke har noget at skjule. Men der er fremskridt, siger Jason. For eksempel det her interview, hvor ingen kan lytte med på det, vi optager. I hvert fald ikke før det bliver sendt i radioen.
Well, that's the danger, right? Is that everything, the discussion stops because either it's too cognitively complex or apathy, right? That's what happens with humans when we have computationally complex choices. At some point, we burn out and we just go, screw it. I'm going to have an ice cream. But you have to appreciate the fact that with all the things that are happening in the world, we are conducting an interview entirely encrypted in real time over unbreakable, as far as we know, encryption. That's a pretty significant step that we don't appreciate all the time because it's so commonplace now. We had for as you remember, 2 decades of pondering where the back doors were. Were they in this protocol? Were they in this program? What are they listening to? How are they spying on people? We now know how they're doing it. And in some cases, it's not particularly complex. They're not attacking the technology. They're not attacking the code. They're not attacking the math. They're attacking the people. They're threatening the companies with lawsuits if they don't comply. I mean, this is stuff that's understandable by anybody. If they go to Google or Microsoft, build a backdoor into Skype, when you buy it off of eBay, and we'll pay you, don't do it and we'll keep you, bogged in the courts for the next 20, 30 years. Everybody can understand that interaction. So the question is, how do we get away from our monkey brains accentuating the wrong aspects of our monkey brains, and instead concentrating on the useful aspects of our monkey brains? The problem right now is that it's amplifying everything. What we needed to do is amplify the problem-solving bits and damper down the YouTube comments.
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. We are now talked for 48 minutes and 37 seconds, which is a long time. It's been very nice talking to you.
I enjoyed this.
I will listen to it and do some editing, and then I will find some way to send the file to you.
Sure. I think you might even be able to send it through Signal, although I'm not sure.
I think we can, actually.
The upper size is, yeah.
Yeah, I'll try that, because that would be very nice. It should be possible.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
By definition.
Exactly.
And the boy gets a cigar.
Og det var altså historien om Jason Katz fra Island, manden, der startede et piratparti, og i øvrigt fik tilsendt filen af optagelsen her, lige så hemmeligt, som vi optog den, via OnionShare. Jeg lægger links til vores værktøjer ud på vores website på aflyttet.dk. Og nu til en net anden historie. Historien om, hvordan den rigtige del af internettet har slået hårdt ned på den forkerte side, siden sammenstødene mellem højreradikale og venstreorienterede demonstranter i Charlottesville i sidste uge, hvor under en blev dræbt. Jeg har fået besøg af Mikkel Andersen. Du er studievært herinde på Radio 47. Du laver et program, der hedder Q&A. Og så har du... du laver også noget, der hedder Rokokoposten, som man må sige så være ja. Det, der hedder original fake news ja. I virkeligheden, i den helt fantastiske klare
fake
form.
Fake news, før det blev fake.
Ja, og det du så også er, at du har også en meget massiv interesse i, hvad der ligesom foregår rundt omkring på internettet. Og der skete noget meget drastisk her for ganske nyligt i forhold til det, som de her en række højreorienterede sig, som pludselig simpelthen ikke kunne komme ud. Kan du prøve at beskrive, hvad det var der? Det var ligesom, der ramte sådan en stor elektronisk bombe ud over det hele.
Ja, altså jeg har fulgt den her. Jeg har sådan en interesse for identitetspolitiske bevægelser. Her har fulgt den, vi kalder alt-right-bevægelsen, som er sådan en etno-hvid nationalisme-bevægelse, som de fleste sikkert kender i forbindelse med de her optøjer, der var i Charlottesville i Virginia, hvor der var en meget stor demonstration, hvor der var en, der blev kørt ned af en af de her højreorienterede deltagere i demonstrationen, og en, der blev både kørt ned og dræbt. Det, der sker efterfølgende, som er sådan det syrede, som jeg tror måske ikke så mange har opdaget, det er, at der foregår et massivt crackdown på deres websites, som jeg kan faktisk ikke komme på, at der har været noget fortilfælde for det, som jeg har set i hvert fald. Altså, der er en række af deres meget... Og det foregår på sådan flere fronter. Altså, det største alt-right website overhovedet, det er et, der hedder The Daily Stormer, er kørt af en fyr, der hedder Andrew Anklin, og den tekniske side bliver administreret af en fyr, der hedder Weave, som... Dem, der sådan er meget nørdet, måske kender fra andre sammenhænge også. Men han er altså de begge to mere eller mindre eksplicite nazister. Navnet Daily Stormer er selvfølgelig taget af Stürmer, som var Julius Streichers antisemitiske tidsskrift i 30'erne. Men det har altså igennem meget lang tid været det største, og det er simpelthen blevet helt massivt lukket ned over flere omgange. Det er sket på flere fronter. Så først så tog deres hosting, nogen der hed, jeg tror de hed GoDaddy, de trak deres hosting. De har altså gået meget op i ytringsfrihed tidligere. De trak hostingen, fordi de mente, at det her website, det var langt over stregen. Det var en konkret var den artikel om, at de gjorde grin med offeret for nedkørslen, der var anledningen til det. Derefter så, trækker dem, der hedder Cloudflare, som er nogen, der beskytter mod DDoS-angreb. DDoS-angreb, det er sådan meget, ligesom en slags hackerangreb, hvor du forsøger at overbelaste websitet med forespørgsler. Og den slags angreb foregår hele tiden mod Daily Stormer fra folk antageligvis på den yderste venstrefløj, men det er der jo selvfølgelig ikke nogen, der ved. Den beskyttelse trak de. Derefter så er de så flyttet over på det, vi kan kalde Tor-netværket, som er sådan et krypteret netværk, der kræver en anden type browser. Der kan man ikke rigtig lukke det ned. Men Tor-netværkets administrator har så været ude at sige, at altså, de simpelthen ved at tage afstand fra Tor-browserens, dem der har lavet browseren til det, de har simpelthen ved at sige, at de tager afstand fra Daily Stormer, hvilket er... Det er fint nok, at de tager afstand og alt muligt andet, men det er meget påfaldende, fordi der er altså både pædofili og stofhandel og alt muligt andet på det her darknet, som er ret udbredt. Derudover så kommer der en meget, meget lang bred vifte af andre alt-right websites, også har fået repressalier. Der er blevet taget deres mulighed for at få donationer, det vil sige deres PayPal-konti, alle mulige andre betalingsplatforme, andre websites er blevet forsøgt lukket ned. The Right Stuff, som er et andet meget stort websites, alt-right websites, som også kører en masse podcast, også pro, mere eller mindre pro-fascistisk, er også blevet hævet af. De er så kommet op igen. Noget, der hedder American Renaissance, som er et mere eller mindre alt-right website, der bliver kørt af en, der hedder Jared Taylor. Han er en af de få, der ikke er meget eksplicit antisemitiske. Det røde af Facebook. Så vi er, og der er mange, mange, mange flere eksempler på det her. Så det har været en koordineret, massiv indsats, som simpelthen har fået taget rigtig mange websites af, og hvad kan man sige, vinkler af nettet, ikke?
Altså umiddelbart, så lyder det som om, hvis man ikke kender så meget, eller hvis man sådan bare ser det udefra, så tænker man, det er da meget godt, de er jo alle sammen, det er jo sådan nogle semi-nazistiske sites, som går og spreder løgn og hadpropaganda og alt muligt slags. Så nu er det sådan nogen, der ligesom trækker stikket på dem. Det er vel egentlig meget fornuftigt.
Jamen altså, i nogen grad, man kan jo sige, det er jo heller ikke, fordi jeg anfægter folk ret til at gøre deres privat. Jeg er jo sådan mere eller mindre liberal, så jeg er jo sådan lidt, at folk må selvfølgelig gøre, hvad de vil. Men jeg synes, det man måske kan sige, der bliver sådan meget illustrativt her, det er, og det skal man jo så selvfølgelig, det bør måske giver anledning til mere selvransagelse, det er, at der altså er nogle meget store websites, som de facto har monopoliseret folks mulighed for at komme til ord i den offentlige debat. Og der kan man så selvfølgelig sige, at det er jo ikke fordi, det er noget stort tab for den offentlige debat, at Daily Stormer ikke er der, for det er, altså hvis man kunne finde indbegrebet af et virkelig, virkelig usympatisk website, der gør grin med hende, der bliver kørt ned og kalder hende ekstremt nedsendende og grove ting dagen efter, hun er død. Ikke? Altså, det er sådan et website, Daily Stormer, altså det er meget, det er for ikke at sige umuligt at have nogen som helst sympati for de her websites. Men ikke desto mindre, så illustrerer det bare lige nu, at der er der altså nogle bestemte institutioner, i øvrigt også ICANN, som for første gang har taget, det er sådan en organisation, der administrerer internetnavn, som for første gang har taget Daily Stormers websites, de har simpelthen holdt dem tilbage. Google har også nægtet at lade Daily Stormer optræde her. Så det betyder i praksis, at man går ind og siger, jamen, vi har altså nogle private virksomheder, som er helt uden for regeringskontrol og alle mulige andre kontroller, som i meget vid udstrækning kan begrænse, hvad folk siger, ikke? Og det har vi også set på Twitter, hvor der er mange, der beskylder dem for. Jeg vil også give nogen ret i, at Twitter har en ekstremt partisk håndtering af deres klagekultur, som betyder, at det er meget, meget nemt for folk på højrefløjen at ryge ud. Det er meget svært for folk på venstrefløjen. Og igen, der kan man sige, at Twitter, det er jo deres big, så de laver deres egne regler. Men ikke desto mindre må man i hvert fald sørge for at få det ud i lyset, at vi har altså at gøre med nogle platforme, som faktisk bliver brugt i alle mulige mediemæssige sammenhæng nu, hvor man specifikt går ind og udelukker folk på grund af politiske holdninger, og der må man så se på, hvad for nogle slagsider, der eventuelt kan eksistere der.
Det er jo ikke kun der, det foregår. Der har været netop Facebook og for den sags skyld Twitter og rigtig mange andre. De her sociale medier har virkelig været ude med riven efter forskellige folk. Altså det, man kalder internet trolde og folk, der spreder fake news. Og der har for nylig været sådan noget med, at for eksempel de tyske myndigheder er begyndt at storme folk, der spreder såkaldt hate speech rundt omkring. Er der sådan, hvad ser du i det her? Altså det er jo... Det er jo et stort paradigmeskift i forhold til det internet, vi har været vant til, hvor det internet har været kendetegnet ved, at alle havde lov til at sige lige, hvad de ville. Altså i gamle dage hed det, at på internet er der ikke nogen, der kan se, at du, om du er en hund. Mm. Nu er det sådan, at nu kan alle se, hvad du er, og der er nogen, der føler sig kaldet til at skride ind. Er vi ved at få et nyt internet?
Altså, i nogen grad kan jeg godt frygte det, og der vil jeg jo selvfølgelig sige, at en ting af de her kommercielle aktører, det er så et problem i sin egen ret, men jeg synes jo for eksempel, de aftaler, som den tyske stat har indgået med Facebook, hvor de simpelthen har forpligtet sig til af egen drift at skulle fjerne hate speech inden for 24 timer, at det bliver voldsomt problematisk, fordi hate speech er altså en meget løst defineret kategori, og noget, der er fuldt ud lovligt i USA, vil give flere års fængsel i Tyskland. Og derudover vil man sige, at det vil jo skabe et incitament til, at institutioner som Facebook kommer til at øre om det, så altså være overforsigtig, ikke? Og fjerne ting, som egentlig er en del af en legitim debat. Særligt fordi det faktisk er virkelig, altså i Tyskland er ytringsfriheden alvorligt indskrænket. Altså jeg har brugt utrolig lang tid på at tilbagevise folk, der benægter Holocaust. Det er fordi, de er antisemitter og historieforfalskere og pseudovidenskabelige idioter. Men jeg mener, en af de største fejl, man kan gøre, er at forbyde de her folk, for det gør det faktisk umuligt at tilbagevise dem. I Tyskland smider man folk i fængsel for den her slags ting i rigtig, rigtig, rigtig mange år, op til 3-4 år, ikke? Hvilket er noget, som du skal faktisk have lavet en voldtægt for i Danmark. Og det kan jeg godt se som et problem, i hvert fald i forhold til det internet, som vi kender det. Også fordi, at internettet nu i dag er bundet op på nogle større content, eller nogle større platforme, som netop Twitter, Facebook og alt muligt andet, hvor du får det, den her, for mig at se, lidt usunde interaktion mellem stater og næsten monopollignende virksomheder.
Tak til Mikkel Andersen, som man kan høre på Q&A omkring medier her på Radio 24/7, og man kan jo også følge ham på Rokoko-posten, som ikke er et fake news site, som jeg sagde i starten. Det må sige så være satire.
Vi kalder det satirenyheder nu. I gamle dage kaldte vi det faktisk fake news, men altså nu er vi jo sådan, sidder vi lidt i, så folk misforstår folk, ikke? Så satirenyheder er vores foretrukne term.
Du risikerer faktisk, at sådan nogle som Cloudflare, de kommer og tager beskyttelsen af dig på et eller andet tidspunkt, hvis du bruger for meget fake news.
Altså, vi er ikke vores antallet af hackerangreb mod Rokoko-posten, det begrænser sig vist til Nigeria-mail i ny og næ, så det er ikke så omfattende endnu, heldigvis.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Aflyttet er forbi for i dag, men vi vender den grad tilbage næste uge med mere nyt fra det her overvågningssamfund, som vi alle sammen bor i. Der bliver noget fra Born Hack, Danmarks store hackerfestival, og der bliver helt sikkert også mulighed for at drømme om sandheden i en sjæl og et legeme. Velvidende, at det bliver ikke lige nu, men måske om lidt.
Du lytter til Radio 24/7. Om lidt er der nyheder.